You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. Yesterday, Scott Davis announced that he would step down as executive director of the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission. Davis has held the post since 2009. He will leave to serve as the tribal outreach coordinator for Sanford Health. Last week, we called him to talk about Native issues and about one of his signature projects, the North Dakota Native American Hall of Honor.
Exciting time of the year, Doug. Of course, last year we had to put that on pause because, of course, COVID related. So we really missed out, but of course, things are hopefully turning a corner here health-wise and COVID-wise. And so we decided to open up the nominations for this year's Hall of Honor. And of course, our Hall of Honor was created years ago in partnership with the North Dakota Heritage Foundation and the Heritage Center, and also with the United Tribes Technical College here in Bismarck, Mandan, regarding their powwow every September. So that's a great partnership, and the focus, you know, is always on, you know, the Native Americans, past and present, that have done remarkable things in their lives for their communities, for the state, for our country, in regards in the areas of athletic sports, leadership, cultural and arts, and the last one is military veterans. So I think when you have those four categories that are very broad, it gives anybody a chance. It's a very strong process, I'll say. There's a lot to the application. And so we're encouraging a lot of people now to nominate your fellow community tribal member. And I have to say, you know, Doug, once these selections are made, our friends at Mokoche Studios who do a wonderful job of going out to the families and doing the interviews, doing the videos for the Hall of Honor has been tremendous. They're another tremendous partner. So Mokoche, Dave and Mike down there, the boys, they do a great job for us. And then the event itself, it's a packed house. You all have been to the Heritage Center, the auditorium, and it is packed. We've had to have overflow seating every time we've had it. And I have to tell you, I've had some remarkable leaders get up there on the front stage, accept their award, and they're very emotional. And that says a lot. I think we're doing something very right here in doing the Hall of Honor, and it's a big moment. And also, you know, it really promotes a lot of the goodness of the contemporary history of our people through the Heritage Center. As we know, there's close to 100,000 people that come through that building every year, and I really believe it changes the stereotypes. It gives our youth really something to shoot for. Aspire for, to make for somebody like a youth, you know, a young person to achieve, you know, maybe someday, you know, as a young person, maybe someday I'll be in the Hall of Honor, you know, if I do good things in my life. So those are a couple things that we look at. And again, nominations are open. Submit those to my office. And then in the weeks to come, we'll be sitting down with our selection committee, going one by one applicant, and hopefully your person who you nominate may be selected for this year's Hall of Honor.
Those applications are available online at indianaffairs.nd.gov. And again, the state has a very diverse Native population, 5 tribal groups. we think about Germans from Russia and Norwegians and Swedes and all of those other people. But there are folks here before us, and this is a very interesting way to remember and to honor that heritage. There's something else, though, that's in the legislature that I know you've been tracking, Scott. We talked with Lucy Fredericks about it on Friday, and that is she's with the Department of Public Instruction. That is a Senate bill that would require public schools to include education about the state's tribes and their cultures. What's your reaction to that?
Yeah, I'm glad you had Lucy on, too. Lucy's been a great leader in the education Indian education field for our state and tribes for many years. And, you know, I'm very glad that the bill was introduced. In fact, I talked to the governor's office, and I talked to a couple of the supporters for the bill last week. Because, as you know, bills get changed and amended and so forth, and they wanted to kind of stick to the original form of the bill. So we're currently working with legislators to make sure that the original intent of the bill is kept the same. So, yeah, very good bill. It's going to complement strongly the essential understandings that we worked on years ago Lucy and I on the curriculum, 40 Essential Understandings for DPI. Kind of funny you bring this up today, Doug, because I was at my son's class, second grade class here in Mandan, and the teacher asked me to come in and talk about Native American history. And so, of course, one of the other teachers came in, joined the discussion, and her too, she was in the middle of her Essential Understandings curriculum. So I really gave her a lot of credit for doing that too. But I think this course is going to really strengthen the Essential Understandings. I really do. I can't say enough how much these courses are needed. And I really hope local school boards, local teachers, schools really look at this and make it a mandatory course. Because Essential Understandings right now is not mandated. It's an elective. But this course, I really hope it's mandatory. And I say that because, you know, it really is going to set a better tone for future generations in regards of history, relations, understanding. And probably the biggest one for us as Native Americans is respect. I remember years ago when my youngest daughter was at school and she had talked about the Blackfeet tribe. And she said, "Daddy, you know, how come the Blackfeet tribe are bad people?" And I thought, oh, here we go again. You know, so I had to rewind her and explain, you know, about the Blackfeet Nation and who they were and who they were not. And so, you know, it's just one of those things that really needs to be corrected. And this goes back to my father's time when he was teaching back in the 70s. So you have seen this long progression of curriculum that has to be written by Native American authors and scholars and so forth, teachers, to correct the right history of who we really are and who we are not. So I applaud the bill sponsors. I know Representative Buffalo has been spearheading a lot of this. You know, I really applaud her and her team and all her supporters, and definitely in my office, and a lot of supporters are behind her on this too. So we hope we get the votes for it, and ultimately will make North Dakota a better state for relations and understanding in the future for our young ones here in the future.
Well, there are certainly lots of Native teachers in the state's tribal schools and in tribal colleges. But what about Native teachers in the public schools? Is there an initiative or an interest in increasing that critical mass?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question, and I think good timing on that question as well. You know, I've had some friends here in the Bismarck Mandan school districts here that are currently working with some call minority curriculum, minority students. Some are really focused on the Native American student population. In fact, the Bismarck School District recently hired a Native American Indian educator position, and I really applaud the Bismarck school system for doing that. Superintendent Hornbacher, great friend of mine, school board members I've talked to in length over the years. I mean, they get it. I mean, they understand that we have a high population of Native Americans here in the Bismarck-Mandan area, and there needs to be a strong focus, you know, to our population on that, because there are differences. There are cultural differences. There is differences in the way we learn, the way we teach certain classes and stuff. And so the ultimate goal is to benefit the student, regardless of race, color, or creed. So I really applaud the school district for looking at, you know, here in Mandan, I have some good friends that are teachers here. You know, in fact, one of them is coaching my daughter in basketball. Rob Birdhorse, you know, comes from a great family, Standing Rock member. Travis Elber is another one from Turtle Mountain, who is leading some of the Native American student body in that too. So, you know, Mandan has really stepped up the focus too on Native Americans as well. So, again, I applaud Superintendent Bitts, the Mandan School Board here, doing these things locally for our tribal children here. And I know there's focuses in Fargo's and Grand Forks as well. I'm not sure about Minot, but city by city, I think we're really stepping up our game, so to speak, when it comes to focusing on tribal education.
Scott Davis is Executive Director of the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission. Scott, there was an historic event on the previous week, and that is when New Mexico's Deb Haaland was formally sworn in as the new Secretary of the Interior, the first Native American to serve as a cabinet secretary. How would you describe the significance of that selection to you and the people you serve?
Well, definitely a big deal for us and in the country. Very exciting news. I've watched Deb and her career as a Congress lady. I didn't know too much about her prior to her being a congresswoman, but tell you what, this is a big deal for us, but also a big job. You know, aside from having fancy titles, as we say, we know, and certainly Deb knows that how important this role is and how tough it's going to be, because in those roles, you know, you can't please everybody. But I just want to be assured, you know, from the Interior Department, and this has always been, I guess, the complex relationship that we had with the U.S. government, regardless of who's in that position, is that there is a trust responsibility for the Interior to work with the tribes. And sometimes, you know, we get worried that it's the agenda of the Interior Department or the federal government to do what they think is best for in the country. And we really don't like that. That's the rub. And vice versa of that, as a trustee like Ms. Holland, I feel strongly that it's her job to support tribal initiatives, you know, whether it's, you know, education, land, water, in some cases, you know, got oil and gas, because that was obviously a big question for her when she, during her nomination. You know, will you support oil and gas, fossil fuels? Well, obviously, some tribes in America don't want fossil fuels, and that's great. That's their decision as a sovereign nation. On the reverse side, there's some tribes that want fossil fuels, that want coal, that want oil and gas. So, as a trustee, you know, for the Interior, I think you need to support what the tribes want, you know, what tribal leadership wants, what the tribal councils want, ultimately what the people of tribal nations want. So I really hope she'll do that. And if she does, I think you're going to have a great, great Interior Secretary there that will go down as history as a true trustee for Indian Country.
Well, as you know, the state's two U.S. senators voted against her approval, and that is because essentially the energy policy issues that they had with her. Nevertheless, as you mentioned, the state has a number of tribes. Some of them have different perspectives on energy development on their land. Let's talk about another aspect of the Department of Interior, and that is the Bureau of Indian Affairs. This is pretty significant change in leadership there, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know, and the same thing, you know, because the assistant secretary under Deb, I mean, I'm just going to say again, it's the trustee for tribal nations. It's not the other way around. And so that's the hope, I think, for me as a tribal citizen, that whatever my tribe chooses to do moving forward on issues, again, whatever those issues may be, that the Bureau of Indian Affairs as a trustee will support that and not vice versa. I mean, that's the true essence of being in that role within that department, you know, and not vice versa. And so I hope that happens this under this administration. You know, I think it will, but sometimes when, say, a president has a different agenda on certain things, and but Indian Country is different. You know, Indian Country is different. You know, we know that. We recognize that because of the treaties, you know, because of history, but also lack of resources. And so when you have resources that the tribe so chooses to develop, whether it's wind, you know, energy, solar, water, oil and gas, coal, as a trustee, you should do everything in your power under this administration to make those things happen, because tribes need those type of assistance, especially under treaty law. So I hope that happens, but we'll see. But I'm hopeful. I'm very hopeful.
Scott, how has the pandemic been dealt with by the state's tribes? Have you been keeping track of that? Are they vaccinating people at the rate that we are in the rest of the state, or for that matter, even at a greater rate? And have the COVID relief and stimulus bills from the federal government had a significant impact on tribes in our state?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, I've been tracking, you know, from when the pandemic kicked off a year ago. I was just down at my home in Standing Rock here on Monday, commemorating a year of the pandemic. So we did a lot of reflection with Chairman Faith and the council and, you know, the health officials who have done a tremendous job down there, IHS, the ambulance service people, just their whole team down there has done a tremendous job, and every tribe in North Dakota, for that matter, has done a tremendous job in regards of testing and now vaccines. So we've been part of that every step of the way because the tribes chose to declare the state of emergency with the state. And in doing so, it really opened up a wide variety of resources to the tribes, you know, like PPE, testing kits, vaccines, just resources. So obviously I'm right in the middle of those resources. So that's been really good. But like everything else, we've lost a lot of relatives. You know, that's been really hard on our tribes. For me personally, Standing Rock, you know, we lost 24 tribal members during this course of time. And some of them, you know, were very affluent speakers, traditional people, medicine people that have been lost. And how do you fill that void? You know, how are you going to fill that void now? So it's been tough. But like always, you know, the resiliency of our people, the spirit and strength of our Buffalo Nation people, as we are, we always get through this. You know, we find ways, we come together in good ways and strength and prayer, and we get through it. So that's what I've seen. You know, I've seen all that evolve through each tribe by tribe. And, you know, there's those moments, too, where people get frustrated like everybody else. It's human nature. We get tired, you know, fatigued. You know, that happened, too. But again, you know, you kind of you have to regroup yourself, recenter yourself, and you have to go at it again. So now we're at the vaccine. In fact, I just got my second vaccine here down in my tribe in Standing Rock last Thursday. So I was very thankful because I'm in the 50-year-old range now. So if I was doing it from a state perspective, I'd be still waiting for a few more weeks to get my turn. But the tribes have opened it up, you know, and some tribes have lowered the age limits from 20-year-olds to 16-year-olds and so forth, too. So, and my parents up in the Turtle Mountains, they got their vaccine about 2 months ago. So they're rolling, you know. The tribes are really rolling, and I give them a lot of credit. They've done a lot of good planning and a lot of teamwork up there. But there's still a little apprehension, I think, you know. A little trust of the vaccine. I got friends and relatives that are still a little hesitant, you know, of wanting to get the vaccine. So there's a trust issue that I think most North Dakotans still have. You know, they have their little second thoughts about it, and that's fine. But on the other hand, you know, you have a lot of tribal members that are getting the vaccine, and they just want to stay well, you know, stay healthy. So I think we're in a good place, but definitely not out of the woods yet. And we still got to be careful because, again, we believe that this is Mother Nature, and we know Mother Nature is undefeated. She does things when she wants, and where she wants. And so we've always respected that. So we just got to hang tight and hang strong and see this thing through.
Scott, earlier this month, you were tracking a House bill in the state legislature to study the prevalence of bias-motivated crimes. What needs to be learned about bias-motivated crimes in North Dakota, and what might result from a study?
Yeah, when I look at that bill, I know years ago with Judge Foudy out of Devil's Lake, we did a study on racial and ethnic bias in the state court systems. And gosh, that study took us well over a year. So we went around the state and interviewed a lot of people. I think that document's about almost an inch thick, you know. And so there's a lot of research put into that, too. And again, that was, I want to say, 8 years ago. I've been doing this job for 12. So, you know, that was a process with the Supreme Court, you know, that we did. I think we did it very well. But obviously there are still issues in our court systems of bias. And I'm glad it's being looked into. I think it needs to be looked into. Will the bill pass or not? I'm not sure. Quite honestly, it might be a 50-50 whether or not it passes or fails. But regardless, it's definitely raising the issue of things, too. Because I've looked personally at some of the crimes that have been done, and I've always kind of scratched my head when a person gets convicted of a crime, say assault, for instance. And at times I've really, really have worried that why was a longer sentence given to a Native American versus a non-Native? I mean, that's a valid question. And sometimes, you know, people can afford a lawyer. And I think that's the other part of this too. Predominantly, you know, My members, my people don't have that wherewithal to afford, you know, a very high-paid lawyer, so to speak. So there again, you know, you have a little hand up over some things when it comes to that court case, too. But again, I hope the bill is strongly considered. It certainly is raising awareness again, and we'll see where it goes from here.
Scott Davis is Executive Director of the North Dakota Indian Affairs Commission. Scott, thanks for spending time with us today.
Thank you, Doug. Thanks for having me, and always glad to be on your show.
Davis will step down as head of the commission at the end of April. Dakota Datebook is next.